the closing years of the 41st millennium, disaster burst forth from the Immaterium with unrestrained fury. Across the void, colossal warp storms clawed through the stars, as if the dark gods themselves had raked a serrated blade across the galaxy's throat. Reality buckled and split, its fabric torn open again and again. And from the impossible depths beyond spilled the warp in a howling flood. From this apocalyptic sundering came the Cicatrix Maledictum, the Great Rift. The storm fronts did not remain still. They spread, multiplied, and smashed into one another like vast tides of living ectoplasm. Whole regions of space were consumed by madness. Countless worlds were lost within roaring maelstroms of unreality, their populations claimed by insanity, possession, or worse. Entire armies vanished without record. Starships were ripped apart while in transit, left drifting as haunted hulks, or flung millions of light years from their plotted courses. Yet even in the face of annihilation, defiance endured. Against impossible odds advanced the Terran Crusade, a desperate coalition of space marines drawn from dozens of chapters, marching to war beside the Adeptus Auroritas, the Astra Militarum, the agents of the Inquisition, and the priesthood and war engines of the Adeptus Mechanicus. Their fleets drove inexorably toward Terra, racing ahead of warp storms that threatened to swallow them whole. At the forefront stood Rabute Gilliman, the awakened Primarch of the Ultramarines, a warrior demigod whose strategic genius matched his martial might. It was Gilliman who had summoned this crusade into existence, and he would accept no outcome, a triumph. Sleep well and enjoy the tale of the Indomitus Crusade. And please allow me a brief moment for a call to action. If you enjoy this video, consider giving it a like or subscribing if you haven't. Be sure to follow me on Facebook, where I'll be posting various things, including sneak peeks and behind-the-scenes stuff of all three of my YouTube channels starting in the new year. If you want to support this channel further and help me wage the war against the AI slop invading our sleep space, consider checking out my Patreon page. You can also find both my 40K and regular Lore to Sleep 2 podcasts on Spotify, Apple, and Amazon podcasts. Find links in the description and more links on my link tree. I appreciate all of your support. Now, back to your regularly scheduled sleep content. Legends soon formed around the Terran Crusade. Its warriors were said to have battled through the traps of heretics and xenos, shattered the designs of demons and tyrants, and navigated treacherous, half-lost routes through a galaxy tearing itself apart. At last, by paths few could ever follow again, they reached Luna, the sole moon of Terra. There, the Crusade met its final ordeal. Upon Luna's surface, Gilliman's forces were drawn into one last merciless confrontation with Magnus the Red and his traitorous Thousand Sons. The demon Primarch sought to deny his loyal brother passage to the throne world itself. Only by committing the full battered strength of the Crusade survivors reinforced at the moment of greatest peril by forces deployed from Terra's very own defenses, was Gilliman able to prevail and secure a path to humanity's very heart? As darkness engulfed entire segments of the galaxy, Gilliman turned his attention inward, refining his grand design upon Terra. Having stood before the Golden Throne at the close of the Terran Crusade, the Primarch emerged with a renewed and terrible clarity of purpose. When the High Lords of Terra named him Lord Commander of the Imperium, Gilliman acted without delay, issuing orders for the mustering of a colossal armada. Even as the first formations of what would become the Indomitus Crusade assembled, its ranks bolstered by newly created Primaris Space Marines of the Ultima Founding, Terra itself came under sudden assault. A warp storm tore reality apart above the throne world, unleashing a demonic host sworn to the blood god Khorne. As panic spread at the breach of Terra's multi-spectrum shield defenses, Gilliman wasted no time. He took to the battlefield personally, leading the counter-offensive that would be remembered as the Battle of Lion's Gate. Before the flame-wreathed sword of the Emperor, no foe could stand. Alongside the Adeptus Custodes, the Sisters of Silence, and companies of Ultramarines, Gilliman shattered the Khornate incursion and cast it screaming back into the Empyrean. Some historians claim it was the Battle of Luna, fought at the climax of the Terran Crusade, that shaped the nature of the Indomitus Crusade. Others argue that the defining moment came at Lion's Gate, where Gilliman and Captain General Trajan Valeris led Terran's defenders against the demonic horde battering at the gates of the Imperial Palace itself. Perhaps either battle would have been enough. Perhaps Gilliman had already drawn his conclusions during the wars for Ultramar and the long march to Terra. Most likely, all of these conflicts contributed in equal measure. Each fed data into the Primarch's unmatched strategic mind, sharpening his grasp of the Imperium's shattered war machine and sowing the foundations of a vast, coordinated counteroffensive against the Dark Gods. Among the High Lords of Terra, suspicion took root. Some whispered that Gilliman harbored ambitions of his own, that the Indomitus Crusade was little more than a grandiose echo of the ancient Great Crusade. They claimed the Primarch had returned to Terra not merely to save it, but to wrap his own designs in the authority of the throne world, just as the Emperor himself had once done. Such accusations drew upon 10,000-year-old myths and ecclesiarchal apocrypha, and were doubtless fueled by jealousy and fear. Gilliman's return had curtailed the power of the High Lords, and resentment festered in its wake. Some even murmured that the Primarch sought to usurp not only their authority, but perhaps the Emperor's mantle itself. Others advanced an even stranger notion, that the Indomitus Crusade had not originated with Gilliman at all. It was known that the Avenging Sun had entered the Emperor's throne room upon his arrival. What passed between father and son behind those gilded doors was known to no one. Yet it was only after Gilliman emerged that his plans were set into motion. perhaps the Indomitus Crusade was the will of the master of mankind made manifest. A final, fearsome endeavor to rival the great crusade of old. If so, it was not undertaken in ignorance, but with full awareness of the horrors facing humanity, and with grim acceptance of the cost survival would demand. Whatever the truth, one reality could not be denied. As the Astronomicon's light once more stretched across the Sol system, and the shadow of the Noctis Aeterna began to recede, Rabute Gilliman was already gathering the greatest crusade fleets humanity had seen since the Imperium's earliest days. Never since the Warmaster Horus had darkened Terra's skies with his armada had the Imperium stood so close to annihilation. With the birth of the Great Rift, half of the Emperor's domain vanished behind a curtain of nightmare, its fate unknowable. Even those systems that remained on Terra's side of the wound fared little better. Astropaths were driven to madness by an unending torrent of dying screams and desperate pleas. There was scarcely a star untouched by war. With every passing solar day, trillions more lives were extinguished. Entire systems disappeared from Imperial records, as though they never existed, snuffed out without ceremony. From the farthest reaches of the Segmentum Pacificus to the storm-choked hellscapes of the Caradon Sector, the Imperium bled from 1,000 mortal wounds. Yet, despite his elevation to Lord Commander of the Imperium, Rabute Gilliman did not immediately hurl himself into battle. Inquisitorial transcripts of his private deliberations speak of a Primarch at war with his own instincts, yearning to draw his blade and strike the nearest foe. Many of his lost brothers would have done exactly that. But Gilliman saw what they could not. This was not a war for ground or glory. It was a war for survival itself. Every soldier, every warship, every round of ammunition would need to serve a greater design. To win scattered victories while losing the greater war would doom humanity outright. So Gilliman took his fury, his grief, and his hatred of the traitors who had shattered the Imperium and forged them into resolve. He would not raise armies in the traditional sense. He would not launch crusades as they had been waged before. Instead, he would create vast fleets of reconquest and retribution, greater in scale than anything since the Imperium's founding. And through them, he would strike back at the servants of the Dark Gods. He forced his visions upon the High Lords with relentless will, setting plans in motion even as debate still smoldered. The moment astropathic contact flickered back to life, his orders flew outwards to Mars, Titan, Jupiter, and 100 fortified worlds besides. He pressed Archmago's Belisarius call to accelerate the Ultima founding, seized every void-capable vessel that could be spared, and began gathering flotillas in the frozen darkness beyond Neptune. Gilliman personally secured the allegiance of the Abbess Sanctorum of the Adeptus Auroratus and the Fabricator General of Mars. Whatever oaths were sworn or prices paid, their support was won. to ensure Terra itself would not collapse under the strain. Gilliman reached further still, into the Inquisition, the Adeptus Custodes, the Adeptus Arbites, the Ecclesiarchy, and even the Officio Assassinorum. What followed became known as the Primarch Scourge. Cult networks were eradicated. Millions of suspected mutants and heretics were burned alive in public purges. Even the powerful were not spared. Horan Shest, consul preeminence of the Navigator Houses, was publicly flogged after attempting to extort political concessions from the crusade effort. Within mere weeks, Terra's underhives became battlefields as cults fought desperately for survival. Dissent whispered in hidden chambers and sealed corridors. Yet Gilliman's muster continued, unbroken by intrigue or sabotage. The most brutal task fell to Gilliman alone. Triage. Across Segmentum Solar, he judged which worlds might endure unaided, and which must be abandoned. Entire regiments withdrew under fire, leaving rear guards behind to die so others could escape. Some commanders refused the order, choosing extinction over retreat. Gilliman did not condemn them, but neither did he falter. Worlds could be reclaimed, lives could not. So the armies of the Imperium fell backward toward Sol, bearing bitterness and grief in their wake, while countless systems were lost. Gilliman knew the cost of his choices, and he accepted it. For all would be repaid in blood when the Indominus Crusade finally went forth. Out of suffering and sacrifice, the Indominus Crusade began. Rabute Gilliman turned his unmatched logistical mastery toward the task that would decide the Imperium's fate. The rapid identification of viable warp corridors, the designation of mustering points, and the relentless resolution of 1,000 simultaneous crises. Resupply, ship repair, morale collapse, and the provision of Medicaid personnel on a scale never before attempted. The warp remained volatile. Some ships were delayed. Others were lost outright. Yet despite this, the Crusade's forces gathered with astonishing speed. Around the Sol system's Mandeville points, within the Gehenna system, and across numerous staging regions, reality flared again and again as flotillas tore free from warp space to join the growing armada. So constant were these transitions that the disturbance itself became dangerous. The Ordo Malleus warned of empiric destabilization and the risk of warp breaches at Sol's deep space watch stations. Staging areas were pushed farther out into the void. Grey Knight kill teams were deployed to anchorages and bastions. Even so, Gilliman refused to slow the muster. Once more, his foresight proved decisive. For every warship arriving, multiple support vessels followed. Fuel tenders, agri-haulers, and Adeptus Mechanicus fabricator barges. Gilliman understood that fleets did not fight on faith alone. They fought on fuel, food, ammunition, spare parts, and certainty. And certainty would not be entrusted to the Imperium's existing bureaucracy. Gilliman bypassed it entirely In its place, he created an elite administrative engine known as the Officio Logisticorum, soon called Gilliman's Hand throughout the fleets. Drawn from the finest minds of the Administratum and the Departamento Munitorum, it numbered in the millions and still struggled to keep pace. It would have failed outright had Gilliman not imposed ironclad structural laws upon the crusade itself. The Indomitus Crusade would not advance as a single ponderous armada. Gilliman envisioned something far deadlier. 10 immense fleets were formed. Fleet Primus, Secundus, Tertius, and onward. Each commanded by a fleet master wielding near absolute authority. Every fleet was a unique amalgamation of the Imperium's military arms, balanced according to Gilliman's design and assigned distinct strategic purposes. Their compositions varied, but even the smallest fielded hundreds of warships and twice as many support craft, capable of deploying billions of warriors. Yet, even this was not enough. Such fleets, Gilliman knew, were too vast to function as singular weapons. To keep them clustered would invite disaster, bogging them down in the madness of the warp and smothering isolated threats while countless others went unanswered. So he fractured them further. Each fleet was divided into autonomous battle groups, designated by High Gothic alphanumerics. Alphys, Betaris, Seristus, and beyond. Every battle group was self-sufficient, commanded by a group master who answered only to their fleet master, and ultimately to Gilliman and the High Lords. Battle groups pursued independent campaigns within the fleet's greater design. They conquered systems, reinforced one another, and fought wars of their own choosing. Each possessed the strength to annihilate Xenos empires or reclaim entire star clusters. Thus, an Indomitus fleet did not strike like a single spear. It advanced like a legion, many blades thrust forward at once, into the darkness choking the Emperor's realm. Still, Gilliman refined the machine further. From within each battle group, task forces could be assembled. Temporary, specialized formations created for singular missions. A world's conquest, the defense of a fortress, the delivery of vital intelligence, the eradication of enemies marked for death. Once their task was complete, they dissolved back into their parent battle group. No two task forces were required to be alike. Precision was their purpose. Yet as the crusade pressed onward, many proved so effective that they remained intact through entire campaigns, forging loyalties that endured for decades. And for these task forces, Gilliman had one final vital purpose. Even as the grand muster swelled behind them, elite task forces were selected and dispatched. Each was joined by Sisters of Silence, squads of Adeptus Custodes, and conclaves of Magos Biologus, bearing sealed gene vaults and arcane technologies. The Sisters of Silence shielded their fleets from warp turbulence, The custodes carried Gilliman's authority and the Emperor's, ensuring no imperial institution dared obstruct them. The Magi carried the miracle itself, the means to create Primaris space marines, born of Call's forbidden genius. Often accompanied by awakened Primaris warriors of the Ultima founding, these task forces raced ahead of the Crusade. To the Imperium, they became known as torchbearers, delivering hope to the embattled, the distant, and when necessary, the defiant. Despite Gilliman's tireless preparation, the first full departures took time. In the end, it was Fleet Tertius that launched first, several days early, spurred into motion by reports of a coronate crusade of slaughter carving toward Sol. Fleet Master Cassandra von Leskus sought Gilliman's permission to strike at once, and received it. She vowed that the Imperium's answer would be swift and unforgettable. The Battle of Makorta Sound would later prove Gilliman's vision correct. Battlegroups Alphys, Baetaris, Delphi, Hephaestus, and Lambdax smashed a multi-system heretic invasion. There were early frictions between Imperial arms, but under von Leskus's command, they found unity and crushed the servants of Khorne utterly. Fleet Tertius surged into legend, driving first into Segmentum Pacificus, then arcing toward Segmentum Tempestus. Fleet Secundus followed, led by the battle sisters of the Ebon Chalice and Our Martyred Lady. Its course pointed directly toward the Eye of Terror. Its mission earned a grim name, the Road of Martyrs, a brutal, necessary gamble to buy Imperium Sanctus time to breathe. Only when Gilliman was certain the crusade had become self-sustaining did he allow himself to depart. Fleet Primus launched third. It bore the greatest concentration of Ultima Founding warriors and Grey Shields, and Archmagos Call himself aboard the Tsar Quaesator. Unlike the others, Fleet Primus fractured into multiple spearheads, spreading outward from Terra. Where its battle group struck, heretics and Xenos were driven back, Imperial beacons reignited, and the void was littered with wreckage and corpses. Fleet after fleet followed. But this was not the Great Crusade reborn. It was something far more desperate. And thus began the Era Indomitus, humanity's final, furious attempt to endure the hatred of the Dark Gods and survive the galaxy's breaking. With the Astronomicon still sputtering in uncertain bursts, Fleet Primus dared only short leaps through the warp. Even so, it forced a path onward, system after system, hammering open routes where the void itself had become treacherous. Wherever a world could be saved, Rabute Gilliman unleashed the full weight of his armies. Demon hosts were driven back from Gothalamor, the Drogo system, and the world of Tallarn. In the Lorm reaches, the Brass Tyrant was cast down. On Ophelia VII, an entire population was freed from the enslavement of the tyrant of Blue Flame, though that greater demon escaped the Emperor's justice. When the befouled beast that had claimed Castor rose to meet the crusade, it was Gilliman himself who faced it. The creature loomed over him, yet it was the Primarch who emerged from the duel unharmed. On Necromunda, rebellion collapsed at the mere rumor of the crusade's approach. By the time the fleets reached Catacan, the followers of the Dark Gods there had already been destroyed by the planet's own Astra Militarum regiments. The crusade halted regardless, reinforcing what remained. And despite heavy losses, the Indomitus Crusade was larger when it left Catacan than it had been when it first departed Terra. As the crusade pushed outward, the harshest effects of the Noctis Aeterna began to loosen their grip across many sectors. Warp Storm still bled out of the Great Rift, but across the galactic south, the Emperor's light slowly burned away the warp's formless murk. Two countless survivors of demonic oppression, the timing felt like providence made real. Those who saw Gilliman with their own eyes whispered that they had looked upon the Emperor himself, as if the myths of a brighter age had stepped down into the streets. Vid feeds and astropathic visions carried that spark onward, rekindling hope even on worlds still drowning in war. But the crusade did not move through uninterrupted victory. It came, too, to worlds already lost. Where salvation was impossible, Gilliman delivered vengeance. The hive world of Bundar could not be spared the bubonic taint smothering it. Yet once it was cauterized with cleansing fire, the warp disease spread no further. Upon the moldering ruins of the cardinal world Glorifia, demonic rituals were not merely disrupted, they were annihilated, until demonic ichor ran in rivers. Even so, not every wound could be answered. The first combat drop into Secundus Terra was shattered by ambushes and catastrophic malfunctions, drawn into a dreadful Alpha Legion trap. The decision pained him, but Gilliman ordered a withdrawal, skirting the entire Primogenesis system. He could not afford to be pinned into a grinding war of attrition. Later still, the Crusade found dozens of systems where Imperial citizens remained enthralled to the Dark Powers. It was a bitter truth, and even if Gilliman had been inclined to mourn the Imperium's misfortunes, there was no time. The fleets moved on. Because in this new age, survival belonged only to those who could keep marching. When Rabute Gilliman set the Indomitus Crusade in motion, he understood immediately what it truly was. A logistical undertaking unlike any the Imperium had ever attempted. Many saw it as humanity's last grim bid to shore up the failing strength of the Emperor's realm. Its scale and scope, eclipsing even famed crusades, such as the Makarian Crusade and the pacification of the Sabbat worlds. To carry such a burden demanded leaders, heroes of vision and talent, capable of holding the line where lesser minds would break. It required fleets of warships, immense armies of infantry and armored vehicles, combat walkers and towering war engines, psyker witches and elite killers. And it required a plan bold enough to endure the galaxy's anarchy, yet decisive enough to haul the Imperium back from the precipice. But Gilliman knew the harsher truth beneath the rhetoric. Without coordination, without logistics, without ammunition crates, medipacks, rations, and fuel in near unimaginable quantities, without reliable networks of information to keep battle groups moving, everything would collapse. Everything would fail. There would be little value in crusade fleets that swept through like wildfire, purging heretics and demons, only to leave blackened ruin behind. The Great Rift poured unholy energy into the void. The veil between warp and real space thinned. Even regions once considered secure within the Imperium Sanctus could no longer be trusted as behind the lines. Soon enough, humanity's foes would rise again to threaten worlds in the Crusade's wake. And if each system was not secured properly, Imperial supply lines would be severed, and the Indomitus Crusade would unravel with catastrophic consequences. The warp's tides raged, making even short jumps perilous. The astropathic duct network that had served the Imperium for millennia had burned out like an overloaded nervous system, with its remaining relays strained toward collapse. Worse still, communication channels to star systems beyond the Great Rift had to be forcibly severed just to stem the nightmares flooding into the minds of screaming astropaths. Even Terra's governance began to buckle. The cyclopean bureaucracy of the Adeptus Terra creaked at the seams, choking on contradictory paperwork and tearing itself apart in scriptural heresies. Wars of the Quill sparked by conflicting torrents of incoming information. These were among the spurs that drove Gilliman to create the Officio Logisticarum, the new, aggressively territorial arm of the Adeptus Terra, empowered to shove aside all obstruction and ensure the Crusade fleets were mustered, supplied, directed, and chronicled at all costs. To give this engine its teeth, the Primarch issued the Boracay Decree. The Officio Logisticarum would be permitted to request military support and protection, even to the extent of assigning tithed regiments to defend it. And it would be furnished with hub fortresses, hardened nodes from which to supply, support, and archive the Crusade's advancing battle groups. The first hub fortress rose within the initial mustering systems of the Indomitus fleets, within Sol itself. Jupiter's warp-tainted moon, Ganymede, was reclaimed in a highly classified purgation led by the secretive Grey Knights. Even as the last banishment strikes landed, enormous Bohr engines began carving into the moon, expanding ancient Adeptus Mechanicus laboratory complexes long abandoned beneath its troubled surface. Orbital defense platforms and void docks were maneuvered into position, while indomitable fortifications climbed across Ganymede's crust, and kilometers-long storage hangars were gouged from its bedrock. Near the moon's core, priests of the machine god installed immense cogitators and data archivium engines, while the Adeptus Astra Telepathica sanctified twin astropathic fortresses at the North and South Poles. Thousands of Officio Logisticorum adepts flooded into the new tunnel networks, seconded Astra Militarum regiments, some only recently recalled from beleaguered fronts across Imperium Sanctus, manned redoubts, bunkers, and defense turrets. Warships prowled beyond Ganymede's orbital envelope. Supply craft and fuel tenders settled into void cradles. Astropathic communiques poured into freshly opened ducts. Ganymede was remade and renamed. Hub Fortress Aquila Adamant. It was followed swiftly by Aquila Bellicose in the Gehenna system and Aquila Furians in the Hastos system. Aquila Adamant and its sister fortresses became the first links in the supply and communication chains, trailing behind the Indomitus battle groups as they advanced. Standing orders demanded that fleet group masters establish hub fortresses throughout the systems and subsectors they reconquered. Pragmatism, circumstance, and the personal whims of such commanders ensured no two were identical. Beyond the mustering regions, few battle groups could spare the time or resources to build anything on Aquila Adamant's scale. Yet all were obligated to establish bases for resupply and astropathic communication. Thus, reinforced worlds were pressed into service as hub fortresses, often while the fires of war still raged across their surfaces. Some fortress worlds, such as Formidica, Satacrol, and Hades VII, were well suited to the task. Others, like the ill-fated Agri world, Mephistopheles, or the orc-infested hive world Olgan II, were forced into that role purely for expediency. Worse still were cases like the Amori system, where the stiff-necked pride of Governor Lucayan Amori saw the war-ravaged capital Amori Magnificus designated hub fortress over the far better suited garrison world, Amori Sufficius. Different in nature and fate though they were, their spread became proof of Gilliman's vision. Hub fortresses rose behind the Crusade's wake, and their very existence helped repair the ravaged astropathic networks of Segmentum Solar and beyond. Through their immense cogitator banks flowed communication traffic and strategic intelligence. Within the Cyclopean Bionaric architecture of their data archivium engines was stored an ocean of communiques, action transcripts, strategic missives, Bionaric psalms, cartographic lore spools, force disposition slates, and more. Gilliman would not allow the Imperium's historic ignorance to continue into the era Indomitus. So the Officio Logisticorum recorded everything, slavishly and obsessively, amassing archives so vast and labyrinthian that only specialist data savants could hope to navigate them. In the earliest days of the Indomitus Crusade's Great Muster, Gilliman had ordered the creation of fast-moving, highly specialized task forces and sent them surging outward into the void. These formations were known as torchbearers, and their mission was singular and vital: to seek out specific firstborn Space Marine chapters and deliver to them the Primarch's gift. The arcane genetic technologies and the attending Magi biologists required to allow those chapters to create Primaris Space Marines of their own. Torchbearer fleets were deliberately compact and swift, composed of small, yet heavily armed vessels built for speed and survivability. Each carried a carefully chosen escort, Sisters of Silence, Adeptus Custodes of the Emissaries Imperatus, and Grey Shield Primaris Warriors, drawn from the same genetic lineage as the chapter they were meant to reinforce. Their purpose was twofold: to guarantee the delivery of the gift regardless of danger, and to ensure it was enacted without delay upon arrival. Some chapters were marked for torchbearer contact because they stood on the brink of annihilation. These waning chapters had to be found first, their survival confirmed, and their loyalty to the Emperor proven before any replenishment could begin. When disaster had already wiped such a chapter from the stars, Gilliman's orders were unambiguous. A new chapter master would be selected from among the Grey Shields. The chapter would be reconstituted, and its rebirth would often begin with vengeance against the foe that had destroyed its predecessors. For the Torchbearer force dispatched in search of the Angel's Revenant, it initially appeared this grim duty awaited them. The Angel's Revenant's homeworld, Libethra, had been torn apart by the Necrons of the Maenark dynasty. Its crust shattered so that molten fire consumed the chapter entire. No trace could be found of the Battle Brothers believed to have escaped the cataclysm. And yet, as the Torchbearers descended upon Libethra's lifeless husk to formally declare the chapter extinct, their augurs detected something impossible. Faint signals of savage combat echoing far beneath the planet's broken surface. The full account of the war beneath Libethra, the alliance forged between the Torchbearers and the last surviving Angel's Revenant, and the chapter's rebirth amid relentless battle, is recorded elsewhere. It is enough to say that the Primarch's gift transformed the Angels of Libethra and ushered them into a new age. Not all Torchbearer missions were aimed at dying chapters. Some were sent to forces Gilliman and his council believed might resist the gift itself, whether due to rigid doctrine, genetic legacy, or long memory of past schisms. Such resistance was judged intolerable, though not unexpected, particularly among the most uncompromising firstborn chapters, who might reject Primaris augmentation or resent the involvement of the Adeptus Mechanicus. In these cases, Torchbearer contingents carried an increased presence of Adeptus Custodes. Their arrival made the message unmistakable. This gift was bestowed by the Emperor's will, and refusal was tantamount to defiance of the master of mankind himself. It was under such circumstances that Torchbearers were dispatched to locate the three wandering fleet elements of the Sons of Medusa. Resistance was anticipated from all three war clans. Their long-standing estrangement from their progenitors, the Iron Hands, worsened by the bloodshed of the Moray Schism. Even the gene seed prepared for their Primaris reinforcements, drawn from Iron Hand stock, was expected to provoke hostility. Yet, events did not unfold as feared for all. The torchbearers assigned to the Lachesis War Clan found that shared war overcame old bitterness. After joining the Sons of Medusa in brutal campaigns against the orcs of the Dravis Cluster and fighting alongside them for a full Terran year, bonds of brotherhood eclipsed every prior grievance. Those dispatched to Megara and Atropos, however, encountered trials that extended far beyond doctrinal resistance. Many torchbearer forces were tasked with locating chapters simply unreachable by the main crusade. Some lay beyond the seething chaos of the Great Rift. Others, among them the Ultramarines, Black Templars, and Raven Guard, were scattered across vast distances or perpetually in motion aboard crusading fleets. To succeed, torchbearers drew upon every advantage available. Many carried multiple cadres of Silent Sisters, whose null presence helped tame violent warp storms and shield their vessels during perilous passage through the Cicatrix Maledictum. Others enlisted rogue traders, whose secret routes and unconventional void craft opened paths no Imperial chart recorded. Potent astropaths aided in locating their quarry, while Grey Knights stood ready to counter demonic interference that might threaten the mission. As the Indomitus Crusade drove deeper into the galaxy's wounded heart, Archmagos Belisarius Call pushed his automaton workforces far beyond established safety thresholds, driving them into relentless overdrive despite the risk of catastrophic failure. Within the vast, maze-like holds of the Zar Quasitor, thousands of Primaris Space Marines were awakened from stasis. Some would form entirely new chapters. Others had been forged to reinforce those already fighting on the edge of extinction. One by one, they were armed, inducted, and sent forth to war. On ravaged Rin's world, the arrival of the Crusade annihilated the demonic armies of the demon prince Raxor. When the dust settled, the Crimson Fists beheld not only the return of Rebute Gilliman, but also Primaris warriors bearing their own heraldry. Warriors genetically closer to Rogel Dorn than any who had come before. Call's raw material had been drawn from Terra itself, harvested only a few generations removed from the Emperor's original creation of the Imperial Fists. Some of these warriors had slept in stasis since the era of the Great Crusade. A rare few even remembered seeing Rogel Dorn with their own eyes. Many chapter masters welcomed their new brethren without hesitation. Others responded with distrust or outright fury, claiming the Emperor's design should not be altered by mortal hands. In such moments, the Emissaries Imperatus, a shield host of the Adeptus Custodes, intervened. As the Emperor's own guardians, they declared the Primaris Space Marines to be the Emperor's will given form. As heralds of the Golden Throne, these custodians accompanied Gilliman's advance, often riding ahead as Verdes Praetors, to announce salvation to besieged chapters. Their presence ensured acceptance even among the most rigid traditionalists. Few dared refuse a gift borne by the Emperor's chosen. Again and again, the same scene played out across the Imperium. Warriors of the Ultima Founding standing before their ancestral chapters, like brothers reunited after lifetimes apart. In an age of despair, they were not merely welcomed, they became essential. Such moments unfolded on worlds from Chagoras to Ultramar, and even Baal, where the Crusade arrived as the Blood Angels fought what they believed would be their final stand against High Fleet Leviathan, in the catastrophe remembered as the devastation of Baal. Yet, even as the Crusade advanced, it began to fracture. Once the Tsar Quasitor's holds were emptied, Kahl departed, bound for other hidden vaults and unfinished contingencies. The Ultima Founding was far from complete. New Primaris chapters, such as the Riftstalkers and Umbral Knights, did not simply move on once victory was secured. They remained to fortify reclaimed regions, founding new chapter worlds and turning liberation into lasting defense. At last, Gilliman could no longer ignore the escalating distress calls from Ultramar, once again under siege. For all its victories, the Indomitus Crusade was only a narrow beam of light cutting through vast darkness. Yet, it was enough. In later years, it would be said that in the Imperium's bleakest hour since the Horus Heresy, it was the Indomitus Crusade that gave humanity the strength to endure. The Crusade would conclude more than a century after it began, at the Battle of Raukos, in the early 42nd millennium. After victory at the Pit of Raukos, Gilliman dispersed the Crusade in a triumph echoing the Emperor's celebration after Ulanor. At that ceremony stood 20,000 Primaris Space Marines, 40,000 Firstborn Astartes, 3 Sisters of Battle Convents, Skitari Legions, Titans, Imperial Knights, Adeptus Custodes, Sisters of Silence, and 2 million soldiers and voidsmen of the Imperial War Machine. There, Gilliman announced the Crusade's dispersal and declared his next war, the defense of Ultramar against the Death Guard and the Servants of Nurgle, in the conflict that would become known as the Plague Wars. Warp travel had always fractured humanity's sense of time. Even a single translation could displace a vessel by days, months, or years, relative to Terran reckoning. More extreme legends spoke of ships cast centuries out of sequence after being caught in warp storms. Such threats had once justified the Ordo Chronos, an entire branch of the Inquisition dedicated to erasing temporal aberrations. Knowing the Indomitus Crusade would span years and cross an immaterium whipped into chaos by the Cicatrix Maledictum, Gilliman sanctioned a radical solution. Each fleet established its own independent temporal standard, Temptus Indomitus. Anchored to the fleet master's command ship, this chronology overrode all others. If a battle group emerged from the warp years out of sync with Terra, It simply recalibrated its records. The implications were ignored. The war continued. Though Gilliman had organized the crusade fleets down to the regimental level, he knew no plan could endure prolonged war. Fleet masters and group masters were granted sweeping requisition authority, rivaling even that of Inquisitor lords. As attrition mounted, forces drawn from liberated worlds were absorbed into crusade ranks. Some commanders took only what was needed. Others ruled harshly, leaving worlds stripped and desperate. Regardless, each battle group became a cultural amalgam, bearing the marks of every world it had saved. Campaign badges, battle honors, shared heraldry, tattoos, and scarification spread through the ranks. Brotherhood and rivalry alike took root. Human solidarity etched in steel, cloth, and blood. Of all the crusade fleets, Fleet Septimus alone was ordered to muster far from Sol. Its location, strength, and purpose were known only to Gilliman and a select few commanders. Those assigned to it simply vanished. In their absence grew rumors of black servo skulls drifting through shadowed halls, clutching vermilion-sealed data scrolls in silent warning. The black ships had long been feared as omens of both damnation and salvation. Aboard them, the Sisters of Silence hunted psykers across the Imperium, seizing them without mercy. With the Great Rifts opening, this system nearly collapsed. Roots vanished, ships were lost. Survivors were forced to plunge directly to war zones to harvest their tithe. Recognizing the old ways could not continue, the Sisters adapted. In the wake of the Indominus Crusade, many black ships became flights of crows, trailing behind advancing battle groups. Like scavengers following an army, they descended upon freshly reclaimed systems, their populations, broken and terrified, offered no resistance. Thus the black ships endured, and through them, the Golden Throne and Astronomicon were sustained in humanity's darkest hour.
Thank you.